Hello and welcome to the HTXT AfriCast. It's Wednesday, over hump day, 4-day week, hooray. My name is Nick Cowan, and joining me in the studio today is Brendan Lotz.
Hello.
And Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
You sound really enthusiastic about this.
Well, I just came back from holiday, you see. I was on holiday a week ago. Well, actually, it was 2 weeks ago. Long ago. It's just like so many holidays in April that you kind of lose track.
Together.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't really for me, because I wasn't here last week, because I was doing my drivers, which I failed. So I'm doing it again tomorrow.
What happened?
Oh, apparently I rolled the car forward. On the
Everybody
very
body apparently
as soon,
does.
As soon as you roll, they're like, "No, Gordon, you can never roll a car. It's cardinal sin."
Yeah, no, I know.
You killed five people by rolling the car back that 1 millimeter.
The funny thing about it is that they got me right at the last alley dock. Like, if I hadn't done that, I would have been on the road.
And that's the easy part, really.
I don't know about that. I mean, I just do know that, like, I've stared at so many blind spots and mirrors over the last...
Swung my neck around 1,000 times.
No, it is. It's like, you know, apparently you're supposed to check your rearview mirrors every 5 to 8 seconds on the test.
I said this in the last podcast. Those tests aren't made for human beings because no one drives like that.
Well, let's not badmouth the DMV until I get my license, shall we?
I don't need my license. I can do a bad
I need to pick up my new card. Hush. Maybe that's why it's taken so long for them to get it.
Anyway, aside from my failures, my automotive failures, you've been playing a new game.
Yes.
It's not really a new game.
Yeah, new is a relative term. New on PC. So this is Bayonetta. It's been out for a long time. It got a port for the Wii U, and now it's got a port for the PC.
It didn't have a port for the Wii U.
Yes,
that was Bayonetta 2.
No, Bayonetta was on the Wii
really?
U as well.
Oh, I fancy that.
Can't remember the exact details, but I think if you bought Bayonetta 2 in some time period, you got the first one free.
All right.
Anyway, when I say port, it is a port.
Right.
People going into it expecting a remaster are going to be mistaken. Also, people who know nothing of the game and see it on Steam's new releases list and think, oh, it's a game from 2017. You are wrong. But the only place it shows its age is in texture quality. It's really low, especially during cutscenes. It looks better during gameplay, but yeah, it's not the prettiest game. It's a lot of fun, though.
Right.
This is like platinum through and through. As soon as I plugged in the controller and I started playing, it's a lot of fun.
How much have you actually learned, or are you just button bashing?
See, here's a problem. Here's a problem that's specific to PC. Do you remember where you learn most of your moves?
In the loading screens.
There are almost no loading screens on PC.
Really?
I haven't been in a loading screen for more than about 3 seconds. It's not on an SSD.
Read faster, Clinton.
Why?
It's not reading.
It's an actual you play during the loading screen.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I don't have it on an SSD or anything. It's just on a normal 7200 RPM Western Digital Blue drive. No more than 3 seconds. I think I've gotten off a combo once in the loading screen. So a lot of the time I have been button mashing, but I did look up some combos online and everything. But this is really one of those games where it's like an instrument. You can play it really badly and still get to the end. Or you can spend the time and get everything done right.
What difficulty did you play it on?
Normal. I'm glad I did, because some parts are frustrating. The boss battles are, especially against the, like, it's funny, the human-sized bosses are really fine. Are really difficult. The huge guys, like, oh, this guy's throwing flipping buildings at me, they are easy to beat. I don't know why. Some frustrations in the game stem a lot from the boss battles. And also because the tutorial in the game doesn't teach you about half the stuff you need to know.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach you how to buy new weapons. It doesn't teach you what anything in the shop does. And it doesn't teach you how to use health, like health potions. They're lollipops in the game. It just doesn't teach you that. If you don't know how to do that, the game will be exponentially harder. I cannot understand why they didn't show you that. Also, if you don't go look around in the shop and learn it yourself, you'll never know about the other weapons that are added to the game.
Yeah.
And the weapon switching, which is really complicated, never shown to you. So, flipping out, it's so layered. You can just bumble your way through, which is what I did for half of the time. And the other half, when it got really difficult, I was like, there has to be a way to get some HP.
Yeah, just look up guides Flip online. So. Yeah, well, I mean, the game's like, what, was it 2010 that it originally came out?
2009, if I remember correctly.
So it's nearly a decade old.
Yeah, there's a lot of guides online to help you through anything.
I imagine mechanically it still holds up pretty well.
Yeah, it does. As soon as you pick it up, you're like, this is platinum at their best. I'm getting very frustrated, especially during the end. Bosses really stunlock you. And I don't think it's unfair, but it's real cheap.
Well, I mean,
it really is cheap.
This is what happens when you give the keys to the kingdom to Hideki Kamiya. All right. I mean, you know what he worked on before this.
What? No, isn't this the first platinum
one? No. But he was one of the original Clover guys, like over at Capcom. He was basically the guy who quarterbacked the first Devil May Cry. Right.
Yeah.
So he comes from pedigree. And he also did the wonderful 101, I think. He's when it comes to fighting games, he's one of the big noises over there.
Well,
we actually got the chance to interview him when they were... because Platinum are based down in Osaka in this really, really big grey building. And there's like a bridge from the main building to their offices where you're essentially walking along a sky bridge. And they were showing off Mad World at the time. Do you remember Mad World?
Yeah.
Right. Basically, it was if you imagine a Wii game in which you chainsaw loads of people.
Oh,
I still don't know how that got on the Wii U.
Okay, it didn't get on the Wii U. It was on the Wii.
The Wii. Even I'm confused by this.
Well, you see, the thing is that at the time, Platinum Games was making games for Sega, and Sega were basically. I mean, I think I remember Zero Punctuation at one point saying that if the Wii was the king of idiot land. Then Sega was the scheming vizier behind the throne, who's like, you know, putting stuff on it like Mad World and House of the Dead Overkill. we got to meet Hideki Kamiya, and we were asking him about Bayonetta, because, I mean, there's one thing you must have picked up about Bayonetta. You've never seen a game so in love with its main character. Like, really.
I've never seen a game with that many crotch shots either. It is amazing. I don't know how they got away with it. And I know.
Well, it's an age restricted game.
No, I know. But whenever there's an age restricted game that comes out now that has anything remotely like this, the world gets set ablaze.
Overwatch.
Sorry, I got actually a bit of a sneeze there. I was trying to say Overwatch.
That's actually a good example because, like, what did they complain over? A victory pose where she just turns around.
Yeah.
And then you go play Bayonetta and you're like, oh. Okay.
But it's also that's also got to do with something to do with the fact that, like, in Japan you can get away with a lot more, you know.
Yeah, but it was an American release.
I remember when Suda 51 brought out Killer is Dead, and that had something in it called Gigolo mode.
When was this game released?
2010, I think.
Yeah, 2010 in Japan, 2009.
That was before Twitter started becoming hugely popular. That's why nobody complained.
Well, yeah.
Well, whatever the reason, it's like I'm really glad this exists.
I just remember sitting there at the time, like, there were tons of I think you would call them woke video games journalists who were like saying, oh, this character's really empowering for women, and you're sitting there going, oh, shut up. Okay, she looks like Sarah Palin running a leather club, all right? And she
really does look like a librarian. I don't know if it was an intentional design decision or it was just the glasses.
And do you notice that she sort of sashays around?
Yeah.
She doesn't walk normally.
Even not even when she's walking, just to like idle pose.
Yeah.
Her back is so bent backwards. Like, that's not a normal human being under that latex or that leather.
That's
a spider lady. No, I know. That's some kind of spider lady with no real bones.
Yeah.
Everything about her is like... and flipping turned up to 10, sexualized. It's ridiculous.
It's actually, I think it might be the Platinum game original IP that sold the most at the time. Although it did get killed in sales because I think that was the year that, it was 2010. So 2009, that was the year that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 came out. And you just saw a whole bunch of games like, just saw this juggernaut coming along the line, and they were like, well, we'll push ours back to next year. See you later. Like, most games got out of the way of Call of Duty that year, and I think Bayonetta was one of them. The problem with Bayonetta, though, is that it was released in the same week as Mass Effect 2.
Ah.
So...
game was terrible, though.
It's selling Mass really
Effect
well.
Mass Effect 2?
Yeah, I did not enjoy that game.
That was the best game of the series.
That was the best game of the series.
Did you play 1 and 3?
Yes, I played 1 and 3.
Did you think they were better?
I enjoyed 3 the most, actually.
I'm not saying you're wrong. Like, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm just saying that's like...
I just did not enjoy the second one at all.
Completely really? Against yeah. what everyone says.
I cannot remember for the life of me why. I just remember not liking it.
Well, okay. Well,
anyway. It's been so long since I played it. Maybe if I went back and tried it again, it'd be good. But, you know, that old thing. Don't meet your heroes.
I can't remember the exact... sales, but I think it sold like 250,000 copies in its first week on PC, which is a lot for an 8-year-old game. Sorry, 7-year-old, depending on which year.
Yeah, but Bayonetta though is class. It's yeah, class it's, in a glass.
It's so good. And something that helped it, it didn't come out with a $60 price tag.
Yeah. Not
like flipping Bulletstorm. it's $20, I think. Local price is 219 rand. Flipping out Bulletstorm, that was a real.
I can't
believe they released that game at $60. That was a... Anyway, I'll have the full review of Bayonetta. I'm actually on the last boss. I got to it last night and I didn't have time to
What did you think of it overall, though? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, enjoyed it a lot. It feels a lot longer than it is.
Mm.
I'll finish the game with about 10 hours, 10 and a half
really?
Hours. But it feels a lot longer than that.
That's because you die very often.
No, it's just because... I think it's segmented, like you have a fight, there's a cutscene. You have a fight, there's a cutscene. It's not a game where you just wander around and there's enemies around and you fight them. It's very segmented and the cutscenes are very long. Like they are actually too long, I think. It feels a lot longer than it is. And if you really want to get good at it, if you want to get the gold trophies or medallions or whatever, you're going to be playing this game a lot of times. I think... like 80% of the trophies I got are stone, which means it's worse than bronze. So,
wow.
No, because wow. A lot of doing good in this game relies upon knowing the new enemies and especially knowing the bosses.
Yeah.
If you're going into a boss and you've never fought them before, you're going to get your ass handed to you. And after you've died 4 times, your rating is in the toilet and you can't come back.
Well, they always do that stuff to you, don't they? I mean, like Platinum are renowned for stuff like that.
It's a real slap in the face, like, oh, finally beat this boss. It's such a...
stone ranking. Yeah.
And the stone ranking is like a comedic character you meet in the beginning of the game, like tripping on a banana peel, and that's your trophy made out of stone. And he's like a stereotypical like New York...
businessman,
gangster, yeah, and he like has a little quip after, it's like, oh, what a day, or something.
Oh, is
like
that little fat book?
I can't remember his real name. He reminds me of the Penguin from DC.
Oh, yeah. And the only one I remember was Rodan.
His name is spelled Rodan, though. That,
yeah, no.
No, and that's another part, like cutscene everywhere. If you want to go to the shop in the game, you go to the shop, there's a cutscene of you entering the shop, and you buy your stuff, and then there's a cutscene of you leaving the shop. Like, why? And
because
you can't just
early
skip
2000s.
The cutscene, right? You have to press a button on your controller or your PC, and then it's like, are you sure you want to skip this cutscene? And you have to say yes. It's not like you hold the button or you just press it and it's done. So, like, just going to the shop takes a long time, and is one of those reasons why the game feels longer.
So, my question to you, Clinton, is it worth the price tag even today?
Yes, it's so cheap, especially if you get on PC. I don't think there's any other way to play this game on a modern system right now, unless they've done backwards compatibility. I could be wrong. But yeah, you should definitely get on PC, especially if flipping 60 frames per second. Again, it does look a bit ugly. Even at 1080p, runs so smooth. I haven't had like any dips or anything, and I'm running an older graphics card. And again, like...
What system are you running, just for the listeners?
R9 280X, an old, like, mid-tier i5, 8 gigs of RAM, off of a normal Western Digital hard drive. There's nothing special, but the game runs great.
Cool.
It's
better
really
than
good.
An old-school system, actually.
How many Platinum games really have cool. you played, actually?
This one... Rising, what's it called? Metal Gear Solid Rising.
Metal Revengeance. Gear Rising Revengeance.
I've played, of course, what's the other one? Vanquish. Oh, I loved Vanquish. Yeah. We might get that on PC as well. There's been rumors.
Yeah, I heard that.
Well, see, the funny thing is that I was thinking that Bayonetta was coming out on PC, and it's mooted that Vanquish may be in the pipeline as well. And it's kind of like, at the moment, you're going, is this is an attempt by Platinum Games to remind us that they do actually make really good games. Because the last...
How can you forget, though?
Well, I mean, let's have a look at the string of games they've had just up before this. Okay, Teenage Mutant Ninja... All right.
That was great.
No, it wasn't.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Really terrible.
Got like 2 out of 10
Star
or something.
Star Fox Zero.
Okay, no, that's terrible.
All right, okay. Scalebound got cancelled. All right, and before that, I mean, I kind of liked it.
I like the idea of it. Yeah, like, give me giant monsters any day of the week to fight.
But the thing was, before that, they had Transformers. What was it called?
That was good.
Devastation.
Though.
Yeah, Devastation. But it was very thin. For a Platinum game,
yeah,
it was very thin.
If I'm saying Bayonetta, there's not a lot in Bayonetta. There is...
Yeah.
Ooh, that game's a lot of fun for about 4 hours.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the only other thing that they've pumped out recently, I think we reviewed, Sahil reviewed it for us, was Nier Automata. That was them, wasn't it?
The Legend of Korra.
Oh, Legend of Korra. I haven't played that.
I'm mentioning it because it was also on PC. I'm looking at the reviews now. It says mostly positive, very positive overall.
That on Steam,
but,
yeah?
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of people said it wasn't very good.
Those guys at Platinum have lived a charmed existence because, I mean, I remember, I think it was around about the time that Anarchy Reigns came out, if you even remember Anarchy Reigns.
That MMO fighting game.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't really an MMO.
Well, it was a multiplayer fighting game, and it was like you fought people in groups. It wasn't a one-on-one.
I have never seen such unprofessionalism.
Nick's phone was ringing 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, and now you shot at me because mine just wasn't on silent.
Absolutely appalled and shocked, Brendan.
I'm sorry. I will
anyway,
put it on
the
silent.
Anarchy Reign was coming out. Platinum basically had made themselves a name as this studio that made critically acclaimed bombs.
Yep.
Right? Because they didn't... I think Vanquish sold something along the lines of 245,000 copies in its first week.
Vanquish is such a good
game. And just to put that into perspective, Prototype 2 sold close to 650,000 copies in its first week, and its publisher deemed that a failure and closed down Radical Games.
So
but like, that was a terrible game, though.
It was not a terrible...
It wasn't terrible.
The first one was amazing. The second one was like...
I have played terrible games. Prototype 2 is not a terrible game.
I thought it was terrible. I regretted wasting money on that game.
This is just off Wikipedia. We'll get back to that in a second. Before I forget... by March 2011, which is the last numbers it has here, the game, it sold 830,000 copies worldwide. So less than a million. Vanquish.
Vanquish, all right.
Which sounds like a lot, but this was a... I don't even know if they recouped their cost. Let me... Guys, I know we're getting off topic here. We'll go back to Bayonetta at the end.
Do you know who was involved in that game?
Just wait. Do you guys prefer Prototype or Infamous? Because I know when they came out, a lot of people were like, these are very... on the surface, similar games.
I liked them both for different reasons, and I liked different things about them.
Oh, if you could only play one, Nick.
The first Infamous, the second Infamous?
The first ones, okay. Yeah, because they came out around the same time.
In that case, I'd take Prototype over Infamous, even though Infamous, I would say, was a lot tighter in the control department, and it was a lot... It was very kind of... the mechanics were very, very sound. Mm. And it was a much better looking game, I think, than Prototype. Mm. But one of the reasons that I liked Prototype as much is because it was rare to play an open world game where the character you were controlling was an unrepentant bastard.
And you could go anyway.
You were basically God. That game was a lot like a game with cheat mode on. It was like Saints Row 4.
It was. It was just cheat mode from the moment you started to...
Oh, no, not the moment you started. You had to earn your bloody power.
Yeah. But it's like compared to Infamous, which I'll come back again to it, I liked more. Infamous was like in the beginning, you have like a really terrible attack and it takes like 4 shots to kill a guy.
Mm.
But then in Prototype, you're like, I'm just going to throw a tank at a guy. I don't care.
Because it's Tuesday.
Did you play both, Brendan, at around the time?
Yeah, I would pick Prototype simply because running on buildings has never felt so fun.
Also
ever.
Felt like you're kind of Venom from...
lot of the time. Yeah. And being able to like fight and change stances in air, in the midair, was just like something that I hadn't seen at the time. It was really just great.
I personally prefer Infamous because I like... that like slow burn of like you start off with a really terrible attack that takes 10 shots to kill someone, and then at the end of the game, I don't know if this was in the second one, you make an electricity cyclone that goes down the street and kills everybody. But yeah, they're both great games. I think you can still pick up what's it called, Prototype on PC.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, the other thing I liked about Prototype was, like I said, it was straightforward. You were a bastard rather than Infamous, which you had these stupid, moronic dilemmas. If I push this old lady into the road, people won't like me. But if I help her across the zebra crossing, then they'll like me. And it's like...
Well, it started off, like, I remember the first decision was like, do you want to take this food, this airdrop of food, and then you and your friends can eat for months? Or do you give it to the starving people and they'll eat for a day? That one was the first decision. Like, okay, that's like a normal decision. And then at the end, you're either Hitler or Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
And it was really bad as well, because if you didn't go whole hog towards one of the skill trees, you were locked out from the really good attacks, like I just mentioned, at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Anyway, to go back to Bayonetta, kind of cap this off. Fantastic. You really should buy it.
Gratuitous.
Yeah, in a good way.
Yeah.
Sometimes. You might want to skip the cutscenes. It's on Steam, so you can buy it, and if it doesn't work or you don't like it, you can refund it. Mm. And it's really cheap. It's $220 for a quote-unquote new game.
Mm.
I really think it's worth the money. 10 hours, that's what, 20 rand an hour? Wait, is my math right? Yeah.
Yeah,
20 rand an hour. I mean, come on. A movie's 100 rand an hour. Really good. I'll have a review soon. And that's Bayonetta. Oh, I'm glad we have it on PC. I'm really glad PC's getting these games.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time coming. And it's a very worthwhile game. There are some games that just... I think we've actually reached not a golden age, I'd say, but we've reached an age where going back to older games doesn't have to necessarily break your childhood memories of them.
You know, well, I wouldn't
games,
say like,
games are starting to age a bit better than they used to.
Like, yeah.
For example, if you go back and play the original Deus Ex, you'll go, what the hell is this?
Yeah, but that's like early 2000s PC. That was a dark time, even though some good games came out of it. I'm sure someone will release like an HD, a better HD texture pack for Bayonetta. Because like it does show its age in looks alone, not in gameplay though.
Mm. So what have you been up to, Brendan?
I actually got to speak to a really cool dude that works in the Dota scene last week.
Oh, right.
His name is Michael Cohen.
Right.
But his name that he goes by in-game is Tortellini, which is not pasta, as Clinton pointed out earlier. That is Tortellini. Sure? This is Tortellini. And he is a hero for many, many, many different types, for many different Dota players. And the reason he's a hero is that he creates guides. So Valve, in about, I think it was around 2014, they added a feature to Dota 2 where you could go and create build guides and leveling guides for heroes that people could then use in-game so that you didn't have people buying melee attack weapons for ranged characters, essentially.
Yeah, just like messing up, basically.
Yeah, just making silly mistakes that you which are really easy to make if you've never played Dota before. And one of the guys that has been making guides since that time is this guy, Michael Cohen, who I'm going to refer to as Tortellini moving forward. Now, what's really great about this is that he doesn't just make the guide and then just leave it, because Dota is an ever-changing beast. There's constantly new patches coming in, different ways to play the game. So what he does is he spends about 3 to 4 hours a day on each guide, making sure that it's up to date and still relevant, which is quite a large task for a number of reasons.
And so this isn't his job. He does this for fun.
No, he does this for fun. This is not like, oh, Valve pays me to do this. No, he does this for fun. He has a Patreon which people can go and support, but I mean, for the most part, he's doing this for fun.
Yeah.
So what's really hard about this is that there are so many heroes in Dota. So there's about 113, I might be wrong, 114 heroes. And each of them can be played a different way. There's different items that you need to buy at certain times in the game to actually be relevant in the game. And these guides kind of help you through that, telling you what you should be buying at the early stage, mid stage, and then towards the later stages of the game. So if you can imagine, Valve decides today to come out with a massive patch update, which they probably will, seeing as we just had the Kiev Major this weekend.
Right.
He then has to go into every single one of those guides and see how the changes that Valve has made impact effect, his guides, which is a gargantuan task. It's really, really just absolutely incredible. And the greatest thing about this is that he has those guides updated within 48 hours of the patches of the patch going live.
Right.
So, and he does this without fail. You can log in tomorrow. If Dota doesn't update today, log in tomorrow. Chances are good that you'll see a patch next day at the latest.
So that's a dedication.
It is a lot of dedication. And the most amazing thing is that nobody asked him to do this to start off with. Now everybody's like, oh, we need an update on this, you know? And I mean, I use his guides for a lot of things, like in Dota constantly. And it's just, it's amazing to see how much work goes into this for something that you use for about 20 minutes in game and then decide you know better and lose.
Brendan's got a very optimistic look on Dota.
I'm terrible at Dota. Let's not even beat around the bush. Terrible, terrible.
Well, so, I mean, you're better than Nick and I.
Yeah. I don't play it. I've never played it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So at the moment, he is.
That's like saying that Tiger Woods is better at golf than you are. You don't know.
Yeah, but Brendan's being modest. How long have you been playing Dota, Brendan?
1,800 hours.
Yeah.
He has about 220 million total subscribers to his guides. By comparison, in 2014, he had 140 guides with 42 million subscribers. The next closest to him was a Russian YouTuber by the name of Grey Shark, who had 102 guides with 13 million subscribers.
Jeez. Wow.
So he's at least three times bigger than any other guide maker. And he's like one of the nicest guys. I mean, in the Kiev major that just went by now this weekend, there were a couple of videos which I'll link to here where he goes against one of the, probably one of the brightest minds in Dota. His name is Kevin Goddick. He's known as The Purge.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the movie. Right. Separate dude. And he used to build guides as well. And he's kind of the guy that understands Dota the best. And Tortellini and Purge go head to head to decide whose items are best or what items are linked to a Dota hero. And he's just one of the nicest guys, you know. So check out the interview. It's really, really interesting to see how much work goes into these guides. It also gives you a bit of insight into Dota itself, like how heroes are kind of weighted against others and how much work goes into making some guides over others. It's just really, really interesting and really it makes you appreciate the work that this guy does.
Yeah.
So, so much more. I mean, in one weekend, he tells a story about how he went to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And the entire bus drive to the Grand Canyon, he was sitting down staring at a changelog and updating his guides so that he could upload them. And then he got back to the hotel and under awful Wi-Fi was able to upload his guide for Arc Warden within the 48 hours. Then he got home, worked 12 hours straight, didn't sleep, went to work. I mean, it's just, it boggles my mind. You know, like I really enjoy a game of Dota, but I would not go to the length.
To the length that he would.
Not play it on a bus.
Maybe it's like one of those personality tropes, like you just need to categorize everything.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with a lot of these people in Dota. I mean, like you just look at the Kiev major that went past this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You were looking at 16-hour broadcast days for the panel, for the casters, for the teams, for the production crew. I mean, your payoff is not going to be that big.
Right.
Let's be honest, right? You in esports in a market that is still growing.
Yeah.
And you are working 16-hour shifts. You're not going to get the return back from that, but you do it because you love it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like one of the greatest things about the Dota scene that I love is people do these things because they love them. People are crafting skins and selling them. Yeah, sure, they make a bit of money off of it. But it's not like these guys have retired and are living in lavish mansions.
I don't know if there's anyone who's been in esports who has retired on that sort of stuff, are they?
Well, if you're in South Korea, maybe.
Well, you usually retire because you're 23.
Yeah.
You're no longer as fast as you used to be.
Well, I mean, there was one guy there who was like 21 years old. He plays for a team called Virtus Pro. And he was like, yeah, when we win, I'm going to retire. I was like, but you, what? No, bro. Can't do this.
The amount of money that's being offered around for these esports tournaments is getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, this weekend we're going to watch CSGO Championship with Metal State and Samsung's putting up R1 million.
Wow.
For the winner of this tournament. And that's a lot of money anyway you slice it.
Yeah.
For a couple of games of CSGO.
I think it's a bit more than a couple of games of CSGO.
Fair enough. I was going to sneeze there and then I didn't. I'm not editing that out. I want people to know that I didn't actually
while
sneeze.
While we're speaking, Ben is just going to be like,
yeah, I mean.
And then you have the DGL, which is also putting up 1.5 million rand this year. Mm. That's across all the games, though. ESL is hosting its first African esports tournament here for CSGO and Hearthstone.
So we didn't get into the official Hearthstone.
No, we didn't get into the world.
We're not good enough.
World championship.
Basically.
Well, yeah, basically, that's what it came down to, is that we don't play enough ranked.
Well, no, we play ranked. It's just we don't get high enough up in the rankings to qualify.
It's not my fault.
Really? What's the highest ranking you've been?
It's your fault, Brendan. 16 you're not good enough.
In really? Wild.
Really?
16 in wild.
Standard?
Yeah. Standard, 19. Never
broken. I got to 11 once.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, esports is definitely something that is on the up and up. And I think, like, if you are a kid that's looking at these guys that are earning millions and millions of dollars, hell, give it a try. Mm. I mean, they were talking on the panel this weekend about just what does it take? And it's literally just play the game and be
every,
as good as you
every
can.
Every day.
Yeah. Every day. Put in a few hours. I mean, it's like anything, though. If you want to be a world-class guitarist, what do? You play guitar every day.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I love watching. That's one of the few things that people don't understand when you explain esports to them. They're like, you watch other people play. It's like, yeah, I do. I really enjoy it. You know, when I was at BlizzCon last year, going and watching those games was, I mean, I don't really care that much for Heroes of the Storm, even though it's the only MOBA I've ever played. But Overwatch was fascinating to watch. And the Hearthstone tournament was great because, like, they'd actually built this stage that looked like the inside of a tavern, and there was like a fake fire in the background, and, you know, these two guys playing against each other, and just watching how, you know, one player reducing another to one hit point. And it's like, no, this isn't over yet. We're going, this goes all the way down.
Not
to
like
one.
This. One,
you know? Goes down to zero.
I did feel a bit sorry for but it was one of those things where, you know, stereotypes are confirmed when the eventual winner of Hearthstone went to pick up the trophy and it was too heavy for
him. Or Pavel. But I mean, like, this is the thing that I love about esports is, like, lots of people say to me, oh, how can you watch somebody else play games? And they're like,
you have a lot of weird sounding friends.
I do.
I should actually have all these voices like this.
But people ask you, well, how can you watch games? Well, how can you watch rugby? How can you watch cricket? It's watching somebody do something you enjoy at the highest possible level that it can be done.
Yeah.
How is that a bad thing?
Reason people watch any kind of sport.
Yeah. And esports is just...
What the hell?
I don't know. Today is not a good day to record the podcast, but we've managed to get through it.
Nick picks up the phone.
Phone that's probably not attached to anything.
I don't think it is. I think that's just the powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so if you want to get into esports, I strongly recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
If you want to do a podcast, give us a call.
And yeah, so check out my interview with Torta Delini. He's a really interesting character.
So what are you guys doing for the rest of the week? I mean, it's like a four-day week this week.
Four-day week.
Stop working. You have to make up all those days.
Well, I'm going to off to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 today.
Shh.
What?
No, you mean yesterday you went to go and watch Guardians of the Galaxy? Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, it doesn't really matter because, like, I think it launched early somewhere and then, like, last week, anyone could pay to go see it on, like, Wednesday.
What?
Yeah, on the 26th of April, they had, like, a really early pre-screening. Couldn't get us into it. I tried.
Acid.
there's already reviews of Guardians of the Galaxy out, and it only launches on this Friday, the 5th.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you what else comes up this Friday, if you're looking to binge-watch something this weekend, is the second season of a series called Sense8.
Netflix
exclusive. Do you know about this?
Yes.
Have you seen this?
No.
If you haven't seen Sense8, Sense8 is essentially about eight individuals who are connected via their minds throughout the world. And to tell you more than that would be A, discombobulating and B, ruining stuff for you. But it was basically made by the Wachowskis, who you may remember from such small films as The Matrix.
Oh, I think I heard of that.
Such small film as The Matrix, the only one. And then maybe the Animatrix, nothing else.
Bound. Bound is a very good film. Have you seen Bound?
No, I'm just saying.
No, you do not. That
I'm saying
what would you know
other,
anyway?
No, the Matrixes. Listen, the last thing I saw from them was that flipping, what's it, Jupiter Ascending. Oh.
Come on, that was like the best film ever.
No, it wasn't even just like cringe funny or it's so bad it's good funny. For that, you need to go see, what's it called, XXX.
Mm.
That just was... Oh, such a bad movie. Oh.
I create life!
Flippin' Eddie Redmayne.
That guy won an Oscar that year, you know.
But for what?
Not for that movie.
Not for that movie. He won it for, what was it, that Stephen Hawking biopic. I can't remember. Everything is something something. I don't know. Here, can I have a quick look up on online. There's a Stephen Hawking bio. Eddie Redmayne won Best Actor at the Oscars for that.
Isn't that The Theory of Everything?
Yeah, The Theory of Everything. And yeah, the same year he came out in Jupiter Rising. So it's like the worst performance from an Oscar-winning actor.
I can't believe that movie.
Okay, The Matrix was good. Bound was good. Creative V for Vendetta wasn't bad.
Vendetta sparked a whole people, like creation of.
I know a lot of people who would like kill if you say anything bad about V for
Vendetta. And I loved. I don't know. I didn't love Jupiter Ascending, but I thought it was really, really silly. It was really enjoyably silly.
They did Cloud Atlas, which was interesting.
I never saw.
But now is Sense8 going to release globally?
Yeah, well, you see, this is the thing, is that when Sense8 first came out, it landed on Netflix first.
Yeah.
So
Well, I mean, like, is it going to be available to everybody?
Well, I think it will be, because it's one of those few programs that Netflix basically put out on Netflix before they syndicated to any television companies.
Yeah.
So much in the same way you don't get House of Cards, because that's on DSTV,
yeah,
you will get Sense8, because that originally arrived on Netflix. And I think the reason being is because not many people were willing to take a chance on it. I mean, it does sound really weird as a concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, the Wachowskis had just finished Jupiter Ascending. So, you know,
they
had been given quite a big kicking in the trades. But it was really, really good.
Awesome.
And also, loads of sex scenes with extra sauce. Seriously.
Kind of sauce, Nick. Two other movies they did.
Mm.
Speed Racer.
Duh.
And Ninja Assassin.
Oh, that was fun, though. That was fun to watch.
But yeah, the flipping, like, dagger thing on the chain.
Yeah, it was just a bloodbath. It was just, if you wanted needless violence, that was the
perfect. Clinton, we have already established that since you don't like Warcraft, you're not qualified to make any sort of judgment.
That's the litmus test.
That took a while, actually, for this to be mentioned in the podcast.
Mm. Okay, so, you know.
Oh, well.
Anyway, so yeah, it comes out this Friday, May 5th.
Cool.
And I will be watching it.
I will not be watching Dota, because I've been watching that for the last weekend, and I'm now sick of watching Dota.
And on that note, thank you very much, Brendan.
Cheerio, Nick.
Thank you very much, Clinton.
See you, everybody.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.